Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
You and I were discussing with everybody that, you know, there really should be, there we go, there really should be no one who's a NAPM, a maximum impact member or above, that doesn't fit into the top 20% of the U.S. income level, and the threshold for that is, you know, $90,000 personal income or above. And our target with the inner circle members are all to get them into the top 5%, and our target with the inner circle is for them to be in the top 1 or 2%. The threshold for the top 5% is $150,000 a year household income. The threshold for the top 2% is, $200,000. The threshold for the top 1% is $250,000 a year. And one of the things that I was talking with the people about in Newark is, you know, we have always been fortunate, or I've always been fortunate to really have friends who, and spend all my time networking with top 1% people. And unfortunately, most martial arts school owners get hooked into a lot of time with bottom 50%ers. And you've got to be really careful about networking with failures, and you've got to be really careful about not listening to the opinion of people who haven't done what you want to do and haven't been where you want to be. But there is a real disparity, and part of the disparity is the willingness to first expand your expectations. We had a big room full of people in Newark, but I will say is the vast majority of them had relatively low expectations about what their martial arts school could do. And that's one of the things that every month through Mile High Maverick and the Sounds of Success and the DVDs that we give out in Maximum Impact, we try to expand people's perspective of what's possible and instill a belief system about what's possible. The other thing that Master Clark and Master Smith and I were last week is, you know, there really are two types of school owners. There's the ones who want to sit behind their desk, teach 20 hours a week, and do as well as they can do without really any external marketing efforts or without any external advertising, and are probably good for having 4, 5, or 6 enrollments a month. And then there's the ones who want to be in the top 20% who are willing to hustle and who are willing to be out and be in the community doing community activities, various fairs and events, as well as the movie theater promotions that we have going on, all of that kind of stuff, which gets, you know, gets to be a little exhausting and gets to be, frankly, fairly labor-intensive. And once they have the kind of cash flow revenue, or if they start with proper capitalization, are willing to replace that effort with paid media, whether it be television or newspapers. So you really have to kind of make a decision on which of those categories you want to fit into. Master Clark or Master Smith, have you joined us yet?
I'm here. This is Master Clark.
Master Clark, what is your correct title nowadays? I know every time I turn around, you're moving up in the world.
Well, I've reached the top right now. I'm Chief Master, and that's it.
Okay,
everything
there you go.
Too much work. I'm at the end of the road there.
The end of the road, which is on a very high peak. I applaud you, sir, for that. Master Clark, I'm sure you heard the tail end of what I was saying. Is linking back into what we were talking about last week. Is as a school owner, you really have a choice of making a decision on what kind of income level you want to be at. And that income level is dependent greatly upon either how much time you're willing to invest or how much money you're willing to invest to keep feeding your school with new students, and what level of quality of program you're willing to create in order to retain those people and show them value so that they progressively keep spending more and more money with you on the program that you're spending. Right. Would you give us, it's for for many of us, it's been a challenging couple of years with the economy. Of course, we know it's been one of the worst periods in the world economy since the recession. However, it's certainly possible to grow and or thrive, and certainly it's possible to have a solid operation. If you were going back to do what you're doing, most of the school owners on the call are not running 28 schools that they own like you are, nor are they going to go, open 5 or 6 schools quickly like I did at one time, nor be a franchisor with a lot of schools. But if you were going to put your hat on an individual school, as if you're training your staff, what would be the 2 or 3 things you would do in order to start growing your school at a clip of 15 or 20 new students a month rather than 3, 4, or 5 new students a month?
Well, I just had a similar conversation with some of my staff, because last month we had our record month for the last 3 years was last month in April. And
fabulous.
I had a big conversation about having a burning desire with my staff. But about that, I mean, people want to have change without making any change. And that was my top conversation, is for things to change, they had to change. And for things to get better, it meant they had to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And we isolated that there's only a couple of ways to have that burning desire for success. It's either out of inspiration or desperation.
Right.
And you need one of those two things. And once you decide you're going to be inspired or you're so desperate you're going to work, if I was going to work right now, I would call the movie theater up and say, I'm going to be there for all 4 weeks leading up to the Kung Fu Panda, and I would spend my time there spinning the wheel and getting new people through the door on 2 weeks or 1 month free and giving them a discount to enroll. I mean, some of my schools last year during the Karate for Kid did 70 new students in a month.
Yeah.
So I think a great way to jumpstart the summer is just take advantage of the media. But I think first off, you got to find some reason to have a burning desire. If your goals are too low, you'll never go to work.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say I was very fortunate. The first year I opened up my school in 1971, which was before half these people were born, Master Reed said, I want you to do 100,000 this year. And I opened up in January of 71. I'd never actually ran a school, sales and teaching, before. And so at the end of the year, I called him up and said, well, I did it. I paid income tax on $108,000.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, I netted $108,000. He said, no, I told you to gross $100,000. So I think sometimes you just got to make a mistake and set a real high goal.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, he's always been with him, like you said, to hang around with one presenter. I was fortunate enough that we do goal setting every year, and he constantly moves my goals. It's kind of, and that keeps me having a burning desire, even at my age, to be more successful all the time. I'm very seldom sit back totally satisfied.
Well, let's anchor in what you just said here, because when I was in the seminar in Newark with Grandmaster YK Kim and with Mr. Norroy and Keith Wilkes and so forth, the vast majority of the people who are in the room in New York City had a very low expectation about what they could do. One of the gentlemen, and I hate to say he's a NAFNA member, he's never been a Maximum Impact member, but he came up to me and was putting together a business plan, and his business plan was to be at 48 students in 2 years. And we started talking about it as part of the seminar. I said, no, I've never opened a school without 100 in the first month. And your number here, and keep in mind the timeline, 1971. And, I mean, we all know a heck of a lot more about running schools than anybody did in 1971. Adjusted for inflation, 108,000 net is, what, 250,000 or 300,000 now. So in your first year, you were in the top 1% of the income earners in the country, which of course puts you into top 100 to 1% probably in the world. And it's just a matter of having that expectation. And in your case, a mentor who you trusted and believed told you that you could do it. And at the same time, you had a happy instance of misunderstanding what he was telling you to do. And there's no reason in the world why anybody that's getting all the material that we're giving them can't do that number this year or double it, even triple it if they have that burning desire.
So let's go back. How do you create that burning desire? You said desperation or inspiration. Let's talk about inspiration.
I think you control your own inspiration with your goals, and truthfully, he kept mine so high, and now I move mine as fast as he does, that I'm inspired to see just what I can do, and now it's even more to see what I can help my juniors do. I just had two guys who worked for me totally become debt-free, which really that inspires me to work even harder because I have successful people under me now, and that continues to inspire me. Where I used to be inspired by my own success, now it's much easier for me to get inspiration just from the success of the guys that work for me.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't think that's where it comes from. I mean, whether it's for yourself or maybe like Zig Ziglar said, if you help enough other people, you'll get everything you want in life, and that's kind of where I am now.
Absolutely, and it's certainly a good place to be. But truthfully, we talked a little bit about this on our last call. I'm continually amazed, and one of our mutual friends has gone on kind of a rant about this recently, but I'm continually amazed that martial artists who would be shy about taking every opportunity to share the value of martial arts training with any and everyone in the community is, if we really truthfully do what we say we do and create the results we create, and I know you've produced thousands upon thousands of black belts that are phenomenal. I probably not nearly as many as you have, but have produced many, many, many black belts and Master Grandmaster Smith as well, is if you look back at what we accomplished, why would anybody be shy about sharing that experience? In fact, don't we have a moral obligation to share with as many people in the community as possible that opportunity?
Well, I think it's one thing to say that you believe the martial arts is really good, but it's quite a different to have the really belief inside that you're changing people's lives and that you're doing the best for them. I mean, you can either make excuses or you can make money, but you can't make both. So you just got to decide what you're going to make. It's just, shyness is one great thing. I suffer from that myself, but you just got to get overcome it. And I think you challenge yourself by pushing the edges and you get over it. Because if you don't get over it, you're never going to be successful.
That's exactly right. I like that quote. I'm writing that down. You can make excuses or you can make money, but you can't, you can't do both?
You can't make both.
I like that. The quote that I stole from somebody is, most people would rather have a good excuse than good results.
And I think you're right. It's kind of, the excuses allow you to explain away why you're not as successful as somebody else. Well, I don't want to explain the way. I want to find out what they did exactly, and I want to duplicate it. I want to be proud of them, and I want to be challenged by other people. I don't want to be embarrassed by their success. I want to applaud their success, because I'm going to applaud myself if I reach that level.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's amazing within our industry and, of course, within human nature, how many people would rather, and certainly you've been the target of it, I've been the target of it, they'd rather criticize those who are being successful rather than just follow, you know, Tony Robbins' maxim of success leaves clues and figure out what it is they do. And all the very successful people, you yourself certainly being one of them, that I'm privileged to have as friends, are very open in sharing with what they've done. I've never encountered somebody at a very high level, certainly in this industry, who wasn't willing to sit down and take as much time as necessary to explain to it and show me exactly what they did with no pretense.
Well, I think that there aren't any real secrets in so trying to. One time I was doing a seminar in Jacksonville, and seven other schools who compete with me were in the seminar, and my instructor said, "Well, why are you telling them? Hell, I can't even get all my people to do it. I'm not worried about my competition doing it." So I'm willing to share, and you are, and everybody else. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense to have this much success and not have other people to share it with.
Oh, absolutely. And if anything, the challenge of our industry is there's not enough successful schools. And as we expand the number of people who are being successful, we're going to expand the industry dramatically. That's why we talked about YK Kim. But his rationale for coming to me to do this whole seminar tour was, well, even though we kind of compete in some ways, if we grow the industry, we're growing the pot for everybody. And the mission is to grow the industry, not to be trying to argue over market share.
Let's go back to your record month for April. What were some of the things, and of course it's a long process, but let's take three areas. What were some of the marketing approaches that were happening in April across your schools to generate a record April?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a record new members. I had a record cash just for this last, for the recession. I mean, it was a record for the recession. And
okay.
I have 25 schools now that I operate totally myself, and we average 27.9, which is not a high number compared to 06, when some months I would average 48 over my school. So it's way down, but way up compared to the last 3 years.
Okay.
What I really concentrated on was making sure that we did two things. One was extend everybody who was going to expire in the next 6 months, anybody who was going to their membership run out, and two was we practiced every meeting, and I have eight meetings a month. We practiced presenting the cash at the end of, I know some people are trying to build their billing, but I was trying to better results. As a matter of fact, one of my 19-year-old kids told me last night, for this month, he's already at 19,000.
Fabulous.
It was only the fourth. Last month's training on how to ask for cash is paying off big dividends this month.
I think there is a kind of an industry-wide misunderstanding of that. Is if you are really focused on quality service and quality martial arts, and I told the story in an article that came out in last month's magazine. I don't know if you saw it, but we called it The Money
Right.
Guy. And I told the story about you, as a matter of fact, which was, you get kind of the industry reputation. I had the reputation certainly in Colorado and around the country in the 80s. But if you're doing big grosses, you get the reputation of you're only about the money, which is the dumbest thing in the world. There's a great Mark Twain quote of, why would any fool write except for money? And the John Lennon and Paul McCartney quote about, we'd sit down and ride a swimming pool. But there's a perception that when you're focusing on revenue, you're not focusing on quality martial arts. And what I told in the article is, if people saw it, was when I came to train at your schools with your staff, you were nice enough to let Tim Kovar, Steve LaValle, and myself sit in on your staff meetings and explain what was going on. What I took notes on was your instructor training. It blew me away how comprehensive and effective it was and how focused you were on really developing really super high-quality instructors. I had the same experience with Tiger Shulman, and Jeff Smith had the same experience with their headquarters and their instructor training. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about how to make sure you're having fabulous quality, but also that you can provide adequately for your family and have a quality income.
Well, the first month of the year and the first month of the summer, all we concentrate on is how to teach, how to get quality students. And when I have really good students also. Like everybody else, I have students that I wish they wouldn't mention my name when they said they took martial arts. But also, at the same time, since I have so many, we create a lot of great martial arts. People that can fight, people that can do forms, people that can do XMA. Every part of the martial arts, I have instructors and students that excel. But I don't want them just to be punching and kicking and not be able to pay their bills. There's nothing worse to me than a great martial artist group, because it just puts a bad example out there for other people. They don't want to be a martial artist because the friends they know that are absolutely bankrupt. And I won't have that with my juniors. My juniors, I can't have them drive up some old beat-up car that's about to fall apart and then talk about success to the students. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You have to be a living example, and that means you have to be successful in your family life, in your financial life, and also in martial arts, not just one area.
That's incredibly important. And
sure.
And again, just anchor in, you've got eight staff meetings you're doing a week, but
I'm
half
on.
Of your staff,
I'm sorry, a month. Yes, twice a week.
Right.
But, you know, half the time you were spending on how to interact with the parents, how to interact with the students, how to teach the curriculum to keep it exciting. You have just some incredible systems and drills within the classroom to keep it moving smoothly and timelines. Just things that people don't think about when we start talking about drilling them on cash presentation and renewing everybody and marketing hard into the community. But the thing that I found, and I can go across the list, just about everybody that I know who, you know, you're coming up on, geez, what is that, 40 years of running a professional school. I'm coming up on 30 years. Anyone who's been around that long and been successful that long, they're really developing quality students, to producing hundreds of quality black belts or thousands of quality black belts, and putting all the pieces together.
So,
Master Oliver. Really quick. I think it's interesting that in New Jersey, you know, on Saturday, I had in the morning I had gone through the 11 commonalities that you find in the top martial arts school operators and the top business owners in virtually every category in the United States and across the world. And you guys have already stumbled across like three or four of them just in general conversation. But the last thing Master Clark just mentioned, and what you reiterated, was that I think what people don't understand is the top 10%ers, top 2%ers leverage every opportunity, right? They make sure that every opportunity is maximized, whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's student quality delivery, whether it's instructor training, you know, the amount of time and attention to detail. That is one of those characteristics of the top, you know, 15%ers of, in any category, in any industry, anywhere around the world. And I stumbled across a Thomas Jefferson quote. I was reading a culmination of his letters when he was in office on the airplane on the way back from Las Vegas. And here's the quote. I think it's fantastic. This is in a letter to the French ambassador in, I guess, 1803. And it was, be assured that our dispositions are such that as to let no occasion pass unimproved where occurrences will permit it. So the same success principle was true then. Let no occasion pass unimproved. Let no opportunity slip by, whether it's marketing, sales, revenue, quality of the student. It's all about that leverage.
Absolutely. So, Master Clark, let's walk back through the two things you said.
Let me say something based on what you're saying, because I just want to say that, you know, a lot of people think it takes a lot more work to be successful, but what I found out, it takes 1% or 2% more to get extraordinary results than ordinary results. It doesn't take a lot. You just got to do 1% or 2% more than what everybody else is willing to do. You don't have to kill yourself. It's just you got to be a little bit better on the floor and a little bit better in marketing, a little bit better in the office. You don't have to be a lot better. So, I mean, even a small improvement makes huge results. So I don't want people on the call to think you got to do something drastically different. It's 1% or 2% to get extraordinary results, different than what ordinary people do.
Well, and maybe to say exactly what you're saying in a slightly different way is, if you're working 40 hours a week and you're making $40,000 a year, or you're working 40 or 50 hours a week and you're making $150,000 or $200,000 a year, is it's a lot easier to be at $150,000 or $200,000 a year than it is to be at 40 or 30. And, you know, resources, you know, money doesn't create happiness, but certainly the lack of resources and lack of money creates unhappiness. And, you know, there's nothing worse than to be sitting there stewing about how broke you are rather than get off your butt and go do something. Our ratios, by the way, in Newark, we talked about that, were 60% of the people in the room were at less than $10,000 gross a month. Many of them, interestingly, with 150 or 200 students. 30% were between 10 and 30,000, and only 30% were between 10 and 30, and only 10% were above 30,000. And those are probably already, you know, a little bit of the cream of the industry, because they're the ones that bother to show up for a day and pay to to learn about this stuff. So, but going back, Master Clark, a record April for the recession here. And your median across 25 schools that you own outright, so you're running them through employees, which, God bless you, I wouldn't do it that way again, but you have skill sets that I don't have. you train them on.
I have different reasons than you do too. You know, I was trying to lead an organization to grow, and I couldn't do it without growing myself. So I think it depends on your reasons.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. I think it's your attitude, your interests, and your reason for what your ultimate outcome is. And so at an average of a little over 27,000 per school across that organization, you drill them on generating more cash programs. So give us just a little sense. What does their presentation look like, and what is their approach for getting a paid and full of enrollment in Reno?
Well, I mean, what we really worked on was how to make the discount and the benefits look much better than the price. So we did some few psychological things. One is we wrote the discount where it took up half the page. We circled it, and then we said what I recommend. So, I mean, the instructor's recommendation goes a long way, and I'm sure that the instructor did all of the upgrade presentations, and it made a world of difference. Whereas before, some of them were sent over to the second person.
Oh, I see. I see. So you make a valid point we don't want to gloss over, that the prospective student and the student builds rapport with the person who's seen as the martial arts teacher and mentor.
Right.
And so you are having that martial arts teacher and mentor do the presentation. I have said the same thing differently, but the same intent is what a school owner doesn't want to do, and this was kind of what was being taught in Atma a few years ago, is what you don't want to do is you don't want to be the master teacher and then hire a program director that you turn over all of the enrollment, marketing, and sales to. Is you can have an assistant, but you want to, as an owner-operator, or as, in your case, what do you call them, the head instructors? I used to call them branch managers.
Chief instructor, right.
Yeah, you want that. The chief instructor is the guy who's got to be responsible for the revenue of the school, and you don't want to delegate that to somebody else. And frankly, if you don't have the person who's perceived as the highest level of rapport and mentorship, is the sales process is not as effective. Last thing you want is a used car salesman in the front office and an instructor on the floor. It's totally incongruent with what you're trying to accomplish.
And that's what it looks like.
Exactly. So you had them writing the discount in the half the page, circling it. The chief instructor.
And making sure they recommended it.
Yes.
They don't just say this is what it is. We say what I recommend you do is simply pay your tuition off in advance. So we don't have this financial situation between us. I'll just be your instructor, and you'll just be my student. I mean, it's a matter of how you say it. And you don't get emotionally involved in whether they pay in advance or not. You just present it to everybody. What they were doing before was kind of choosing who they thought would pay in full. And so they might only present some people. But I told them, hey, it's your job to get every student the opportunity to get a discount.
Mm-hmm.
And the timeline of the money, because of inflation right now, really matters. So you've got to make sure you make as much money as possible. I'm trying to get all my instructors debt-free like I have some of them. So, and that means they got to maximize their income every month. It means you have to present cash to everybody and not get emotionally involved in what decision they make.
Well, and something I've taught our staff for years, too, is if you prejudge ahead of time, you're always judging the ones who can, you're judging that they can't, and many of the ones who you're judging can really can't, is it's so difficult to prejudge. You know, some of the biggest cash deals I've ever done, they didn't drive up in a Porsche and wear a Rolex and, you know, mom with an MD and dad with a lawyer. Is, you know, I've had some that I thought could barely pay for the tuition who've given me, you know, stacks of $100 bills. And so you never want to prejudge anybody. And I see that happen so many times is they're in a sales process and they think the person's broke. So then they undersell them. And in reality is that person could have done it fine. On the other hand, you might be looking at somebody who you think can, but they're, you know, mortgaged to the hilt and they don't have an extra penny anywhere.
Right. I mean, that often happens. But, I mean, you know, you're not going to get anybody to pay monthly or in full if the floor is not right. If you're not teaching a great class, you're not going to get paid either way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there is no such thing as high-pressure sales because nobody's going to do anything they don't want to do.
Right. And if they're not thrilled by your instruction, then you're not going to get a cash deal, but you're also not going to, in most cases, aren't going to get the enrollment. You're certainly not going to collect on it.
Well, so, you know, we don't present the upgrade based on cash. We present the upgrade based on whatever it is, $200 a month for 36 with a down payment, whatever the down payment happens to be that month we're running. And we do the paperwork for the program first. And after that, we say, by the way, there is another way you can pay the tuition. And say, if you're interested in saving money, I'll show it to you. And then we, after they've already signed the membership, given us the down payment, at that point, we present the cash. We don't confuse the issue if they want to be an upgraded student or not based on if they can pay in full or not.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Oliver?
Yes.
Well, one of the people on the call may not know yet. Well, some of the people on the call may not know yet, but the process that Mr. Clark has kind of outlined is one of the things that we're going to be walking everybody through in great detail at that two-day leadership persuasion and sales boot camp we're having in Denver in June 10th and 11th. So sort of like the orchestration of what Master Clark was just talking about was only allowing the customer to make one decision at a time, never a compound decision, never price and term, or price options and term. That's three decisions, right? Things like that. So all of that orchestration and things like that, we're going to be going basically, you know, all the way down to the smallest component at this two-day event we're having in June. So just an additional opportunity for folks who really want to, you know, not only learn the strategy and the outline, but bring their staff along, learn the exact phraseology to use, the tonality, the body posture, the you know, psychological triggers that are happening during that conference. All of that stuff is a big component of this event. So if they haven't heard about it yet, they will be in the next couple of days, but that's a big piece of this in June.
Absolutely. Chief Master Clark, I know you're off to Korea here. Do you have a few more minutes, or do you have to get off?
No, I'm okay.
Don't let us chew up too much before you have to be off to the airport here.
No problem at all. I'll be glad to be on the line with you.
Sorry.
I hope you brought your extra battery there, Master Clark.
No problem at all. I have boosters.
Yeah. There you go. That leads to so many possibilities. I'm not going to go there. So going back, the two things we focused on to hit the best month in a few years during this recession was more people paying in full, and we've heard presenting the discount. What type of discount were you giving them, by the way, for everybody's clarification?
Well, for family memberships that were 36 months, we gave 30%, which I don't think very often. And so we had a... Here's the deal. The student doesn't know what the discount is, so it doesn't really matter. They'll do it for 10%, 20, or 30. The only reason I change the discount is to make my instructors excited to give it. So sometimes they don't think they have anything to offer. So the only reason I change anything is to make the instructors motivated.
That's a really, really, really good point.
I mean, that's nothing to do with the student's perception. Because if I make a recommendation that they pay in full with no discount, I believe I can get students to pay in full with no discount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So the recommendation should carry. Now, we don't do any, we don't ever teach a class without role-playing a class, and we don't ever do a presentation without role-playing that presentation, including on Monday's meeting, we talk about everybody we're going to present that week an upgrade, and we role-play across the board. Mr. Johnson, you know, and then we do the whole thing name by name with the instructors go around and role play with each other. So they're used to doing it over and over again, even though some of my guys have been with me 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
We still role play upgrades when we're doing upgrades.
Well, the example is if you learned Sidekick 25 years ago and you haven't done one since, you're probably not very good at it, right? And the same as we train in martial arts, and you don't learn martial arts in a lecture. You learn martial arts in lecture. You learn through lecture and example, and then you do it yourself, and then you get critique, and then you learn to strike a pad. You learn distance and timing. You learn what to do if things don't go exactly right. You learn controlled sparring. You learn sparring. And truthfully, everything that we do in the school is identical in that learning process. And so many times what we want to do is we want to hire staff and have a 30-minute lecture on a script or an enrollment process or an upgrade process and think that they've got it. And they've got no more got it than if you, you know, lectured your 5-year-old on how to ride a bicycle, or if you lectured your white belt on how to do a sidekick and thought that if they got attacked, they would have it down. So it's a very important consideration. And I think the other consideration, Master Clark, is that most of us as school owners have never spent anywhere near the amount of time learning how to be effective as a master instructor and as a marketer and as a manager and as a mentor and trainer that we did learning our martial arts. And, you know, it's going to be your career to be a mentor and teacher and manager and marketer of your school. You've got to be willing to invest a comparable amount of time to learning those skills, but also to practicing those skills.
Well, I mean, we role-play every aspect of our business. I mean, I think a bigger problem is the average guy never practices teaching. He just teaches.
Yep.
But my guys have to practice teaching 2 or 3 of the meetings a month, and I sit in and watch, and I critique them, and I have a feedback sheet I hand them on if they didn't build rapport, if they didn't do black belt a minute, if they didn't follow the structure, if they didn't follow the class planner. So, I mean, we're constantly practicing how to teach better. And I think the problem is not that they don't know it, is that everybody wants to change. That's a bigger problem in all aspects of our business. So it's kind of like you're running a restaurant. You know, the salt is supposed to be right in the middle. And their job is to move it, and my job is to move it back and put it right in the middle and say, no, I want it right here. Because everybody has to change everything. So if you can kind of vision running a restaurant where you know where the salt goes, and every one of your damn employees tries to move it off the center, and if you don't fix it immediately, it gets further and further away, and pretty soon it's on another table. So that's kind of the way I look at my business. I don't ever get mad when they change things. I don't get mad. I just move it back to where it's supposed to be. No, it belongs right here. Let's practice that. And so I don't get upset. Otherwise, I would have killed people by now.
Yep. We probably both come close with time is true. You went through a checklist pretty quickly. I think it was a valuable checklist. You're grading them on building rapport.
That's one. And it's been 10 items under building rapport, 10 items under structure, 10 black belts on setting the goal to black belt, and 10 items on the structure of the class. I may have said that twice. We have 10 things they do in 4 different categories. And one of them is what the instructor does, one of them is what the students do, how to build rapport, and then what the class does as a whole. I mean, there's 4 different areas of the floor that we work on all the time, structure being the most important.
Right. Let's talk about the one that frankly most instructors don't think much about. But what are some of the elements that you're teaching your instructors? I've seen some of your instructor training. I was very impressed. You're teaching them to build rapport with the parents, with any other spectators, and with the students.
Right.
Well, what are some of the elements of that?
Well, I mean, we start the class every time with building rapport with the parents. We have the class bow to the parents before they, and we have the parents stand up, and they all bow. The students bow to the parents before they bow to the instructor. That's the first element. Next is we constantly use their name. We constantly pair the child up with the parent by having them stand together. We build rapport with the parents by having them come on the floor and help us with the class. So those are the things we do with the parents. We have the parents sometimes read the lesson of the month or give testimony. So we have 5 ways to build with the parents and 5 ways to build with the students. You use their name, they smile, you use safe touch, you praise them, and you highlight them. Those are the 5 ways you build rapport with the students. Do the same thing with the parents.
Absolutely. And studies have shown over and over and over again that the subconscious way that people really felt they were paid attention to or not is physical touch. And the word you used was safe touch, obviously.
Right.
Touching them
right.
on the shoulder, not touching them somewhere inappropriate. But that human contact is one of the ways that subconsciously we all feel that we were recognized, paid attention to, respected, and cared for. And, of course, the quickest way to have your students like you is for you to sincerely like and care about them at all levels.
Sure.
Kitty, structure is a little bit more difficult to present in words without being visual, but give us some sense of the structure you're teaching.
The structure is when I walk into the class, first off, we have dots on the floor. Every student has their own territory. We line up by height, with the shortest people in the front, not by rank, so that the instructor can make eye contact with every student. Always when we do line drills, line one and two face each other, three and four, five and six come behind. The structure is how you pick up the target, how you put on your pads, how you do line drills in the back where the shield target's already held by the last person in line because that's also the largest person in line. So it's how the class looks, and it has to look like a military unit, or I don't like the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've that right that sense at all.
It does to me, having seen you do it. The thing that I describe to people is that all parents kind of expect martial arts classes to look like that opening scene on the island near the dragon.
Exactly.
Where suddenly,
that's what I'm trying to duplicate. That's what I duplicate my class, every class.
Yeah. And so many times, and it's where the rotating curriculum structure is brilliant, is people end up with organized chaos, and the organized part is only because the instructor knows what's supposed to be going on, but a bystander just looks like chaos. And that doesn't impress anybody, certainly doesn't impress the parent who's going to be interested and willing to write you a check for 3 years or 4 years in advance.
Well, my class looks very much like a military drill unit, and the only thing about the rotating curriculum is that that's just what's in the class planner, and the instructor knows what it is, and matter of fact, the students do, because on Monday, we email them all what they're learning that week. We mail them the class planner. This is what we're studying. So they're on board, too. If the instructor makes a mistake, they'll go, hey, this is what the planner says.
Excellent. Well, if you have time, let's go through the one other black belt. You're setting the vision to be a black belt in 10 different ways every class. What's the methodology for that?
It might be leadership where everybody knows the date they're going to test for their black belt. When you sign up, we say you're 11 years old now. When you're 13 or when you're 14, on this day, you're going to, by then, you'll test it for your black belt. So everybody knows their black belt test date. Several times a month, we'll have a day where we ask everybody that day what their black belt testing day. So they're constantly reaffirming their goals. So we ask them to punch like black belts, be strong as black belts. We refer to black belts several times in the class, in all the color belt classes. In the black belt classes, we talk about leadership. We talk about being a leader and when they're going to test for the next rank. But we constantly bring up their steps towards black belt in the class, and we have 10 steps to do that. One is announce your testing day. One is everything is done like a black belt. Strength of a black belt. I mean, we're constantly using that word in 10 different areas.
Very, 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 very important. Very, very, very important. Now,
what's just as important is the parents know when we expect their child to test for their black belt by, and they need to know and write down and tell us what changes they expect their child to have achieved by the time they make their black belt. So that's kind of, they resell themselves all the time when they write that down. When he's a black belt, I expect his grades to be A's and B's. I expect him to be courteous. So, I mean, that's also part of black belt amendments, is the parent's involvement in understanding what will happen as their child grows towards being a black belt.
Absolutely. It's so important. And I nearly got myself lynched while we did our little seminar in Dallas. And what it was is we had two types of participants. We had a lot of pretty hardcore MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu types. We also had some, you know, very long-standing judo schools. And my comment was, that got me in trouble, is I said, well, not that you guys are doing anything that's advanced or you know, more elite than anybody. You're just as dumb as all the Korean stylists were in the 60s. And what I meant by that is, if somebody's not making progress every 2 or 3 months, is very few people are ever going to get the black belt, no matter how elite or capable or how much stuff you're going to teach them. And frankly, our mission is to develop people who feel like they can be confident, and then teach them stuff that's fairly difficult to learn rather than weed them all out early on. What's your observation on that, Master Clark?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they think making a black belt the end of the road. But in our organization, that's just the beginning. So our goal is to get people to black belt within a 2 to 2 to 4 year period, then the advanced training starts at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally different. Than, it doesn't really matter what style you're teaching, but it has to be in your school somewhere between 3 and 5 years to complete this all anyway, unless you're a natural athlete. So I'm just trying to keep them as long as I can so they get as much benefit from as possible.
Well, and absolutely, and if you don't give them regular progress increments, and it doesn't matter whether they're 28 years old, 48 years old, or 8 years old, if they're not getting those regular progress increments, then they get discouraged and drop out. I give the example of, I went to Georgetown, and you have at least a midterm and a final, and usually in a semester you have 3 or 4 different things that are progress increments, and if you just went for 4 years and then had the first recognition of you either passed or failed, very few people would get there.
Right. Well, I mean, we test every 2 months, like most Korean organizations, but our black belts test every 2 months also.
Yep.
So once you start that, people want to know, they want to learn in increments, like you said, and, I mean, it works. We've got 300,000 active students, so... I mean, if you really want to build your organization and influence a lot of people, you might change the way you're doing things.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Well, and before you have to run, is the mythology of selling out in order to run a commercial school is just the most annoying thing I've yet to see. But 300,000 martial arts students is just an awful lot of productive and positive impact on our society is just incredible. And I know, and I've seen it, is throughout your organization, and the 300,000 is the ATA organization, is throughout that organization, the focus is on building better people. It's about character and life skills. It's about being better, more honest human beings. And the effect that your organization has in this country is immeasurable. I mean, because every one of those people has a ripple effect of 10, 15, 20 people that they're in contact with that they're improving as well. I think we've got to not forget what it is we're selling, and it's not a front kick.
Right. But, I mean, and there are a lot of people out there that are concerned what you said earlier about MMA, and maybe we're not teaching the real thing, or maybe if you're making money or not, but... One of the recent world champions with WEC was Anthony Pettis, and he's one of our third degrees, and he still teaches in one of our schools at Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that all of us are capable of switching gears. If you build an inside, if you have a burning desire to do martial arts, you can do any style of martial arts. And you can do MMA if you have the talent to. And he's just one of our third degrees. So I think all martial arts is great. You just got to have a burning desire for yours. If you must be successful, or you won't teach very many people, I can promise you that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Master Clark, any last words of wisdom to wrap up for our gang? We certainly appreciate your time, especially as you're getting ready to get onto a very long flight to you're going to Seoul, I believe.
Right, I'm going to Seoul, and it's a long, long flight. But I would say find a way to have a burning desire. And you mentioned that this was work. One of my guys today was talking to me about when was I going to quit. There's no way to quit. I mean, this is really my vacation is when I'm working.
Yeah.
And truthfully, find a way to have a burning desire. Be teachable, and then along the way, be coachable. Make changes. I mean, if you can do those things, you can master this martial arts thing. It's not brain surgery. It's simple things done over and over again without changing them, unless it's necessary. I mean, so it's a great, great business. It's better than anything else I could have done with my life. I can tell you that.
Oh, without a doubt. Somebody asked the same question of myself in YKKM in New Jersey. And that was my answer specifically. It's like, well, what would I possibly do that's as fulfilling or as fun as
right.
what I'm doing
right.
for a career?
Right.
Hey, Master Clark, right. any thoughts for our members on what you've seen developing with our organization the last couple of years? I know you and I have been friends since probably I was 13, hanging around with Grandmaster Smith, who's lurking in the background of the call here.
Well, I mean, you got to understand that I learned the original upgrade process from Master Smith and Master Corley at the Battle of Atlantic years and years ago. So I would say you can't do it on your own. I had to get input from them, Master Reed and Grandmaster H. U. Lee. Get in a system and follow it. Don't try to do it on your own. It's just too damn hard. So I know what you're doing, putting people together and constantly reminding them. You're not teaching them something new every week. Somebody mentions them, what are they going to give me new next month? Well, they're going to remind you of everything you're supposed to do. That's all I do in my meetings, is remind them over and over of what's supposed to happen so that we don't forget. That's all. It's kind of like search. You know what the Bible says, go on Sunday.
Absolutely. I went to a seminar recently, and one of the people I work with asked me, they said, what are you learning new at this seminar? I said, well, you asked me the wrong question. And they said, what do you mean? I said, you should have asked me, what am I learning at the seminar that I already knew but am not doing?
Exactly.
Or that I already knew but am not doing as well as I could. And, you know, you and I are both at the point, we go to lots of seminars and write notes. Occasionally we hear something new, but I constantly hear things either I'm not doing very as effectively as I could, or things that I knew and did 10 years ago that I'm not doing now. And many of our members hear things that they were doing 6 months ago that they may not be doing consistently or effectively now.
You know, well, Master Clark, have a...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you know, for things to change, you've got to change, and the best way to change is to get all the information. So that's why I think you guys are doing such a great job, is nothing really changes unless you change yourself. So things to get better, you got to get better. That means you got to train. You got to train your business and your martial arts.
Without a doubt. And certainly in your case and in my case, we've always been willing to spend a ton of money improving ourselves and improving our organization, both from an educational standpoint and creating opportunities. And if you're not willing to do that, you're never going to be in the top 20%, 5%, 1% of the industry.
That's true.
Well, enjoy your long and hopefully uneventful flight to Seoul, Korea. And I know we'll be talking as soon as you get back off the plane, so I look forward to it.
Me too. Thanks for letting me talk, guys.
Thank you, Chief Master Clark. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, everybody.
Master Grandmaster Smith, we have you on the call here somewhere. And Master Toby, Master Milroy, I know you're here.
I'm here too. I'm just trying to unmute.
There you go. Well, Grandmaster Smith, Master Clark, Chief Master Clark, I should say, is brilliant as always. And, you know, I can't imagine anybody who's been a better friend for you and myself and our organization over the years. He's truly one of the people who's in the pinnacle of the industry. What did he hit upon that you would reemphasize or clarify for our members as an important point right now?
Burning desire.
Mm-hmm.
Because that covers everything. If you have the burning desire, then you're going to do all of this stuff. And you know, that's the one thing that I find that our school owners out there, their biggest problem is being part of NATMA gives them a lot of knowledge. And what I find is the biggest mistake that people that are in associations, or if they have somebody that they're getting information from, it was a real important point that Master Clark said, is when he looked out in the audience and he saw some of the school owners that were nearby his school out in the audience, and his mentor said to him, look, those guys are out there. They're going to learn how to do all this. And he said, well, you know, how are they going to go do it? I can't even get my own guys to do it when I'm, you know, barking at them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's because it's hard to teach burning desire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when somebody has that burning desire, they're going to be on every NATMA call. They will be at every seminar, because they realize that the stuff that they're learning, if they put it into effect, is going to work. And the difference between it working and not working, 99% of the time, is that they fail to implement.
Mm-hmm.
So
even if you know what to do, if you don't get your butt out of bed and go do it, it's not going to happen. You know, a lot of them think just by going to an event or listening to one of the teleconferences that they're going to, you know, that something's magically going to happen and it's going to, be done for them. And that's the only thing that we haven't figured out how to do yet. And I'm not saying we can't do it. Toby's got some great things up his sleeve, but that's the one that we're trying to do, is to figure out how to get them to do these things. And once we can solve that, then we're going to have even more successful schools.
Yeah, and I call that the magic pixie dust phenomenon. If people think that somehow we're going to sprinkle pixie dust over them and suddenly they're going to be making $100,000 a year income or $200,000 a year income by doing the same stuff they've always done and by working the same level of intensity they've always done, and by having the same crowd of friends they've always had, and by having the same crowd of staff, or not having any staff, as they've always had. And the world doesn't work that way. You go out and create opportunities for yourself or not.
And the good things that he said is that he tries to just keep things on track. He tries to, you know, make sure that they're staying in line. But they're the ones that have to take the step forward. They're the ones that have to set those goals. They're the ones that have to reach these goals, because we can show you how to do it, but we can't, literally do it for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, let's talk. Yeah, go right ahead.
I think it's interesting enough, because we've kind of circled the drain. We've circled around this about three times now. And I think that there's a how, there's a what, and there's a how, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the what you have to do is you have to figure out how to build this fire, right? You have to figure out how to have this desire that's going to get you out of bed in the morning and it's going to keep you up at night and it's going to keep everything moving forward, right? Keep you growing. And I think the how is this. I know for me anyway, and I know for you and a lot of the people that made me surround myself with, and vice versa, the people that you surrounded yourself with. I think number one, obviously you have to believe that better results are possible. And obviously everybody on the call does that. That's why they're here. But how do you do that? How do you, it's either, and what Master Clark said was, it's either desperation or inspiration, right? Well, to me, the most impactful thing that's ever happened in my life to facilitate that was being surrounded by other top 10%ers, right? Being surrounded by people who have already accomplished what it is that I wanted to accomplish. And I've deliberately sought those folks out in several different industries now, certainly in the casino industry when I was doing that, and in the restaurant industry when I was doing that. I've always, made it a specific strategy to go find people who are doing what I want to do and, go hang out with them, right? And I know you've done the same thing at a very high level in this industry and many others. So I think there's the what, which is you have to, build that desire. I think the how is that. I think the how is you find those folks, and as we know in this industry, that category of people are infinitely willing to share this stuff. I mean that's what we do every day, right? But I think that's really the how. You get in the room with these guys, you spend as much time as you can with them, you pick their brain, and I think here's where the inspiration or desperation comes from. The inspiration for me came from sitting in a seminar with Bill Clark. Right, and Master Jeff Smith and Grandmaster Stephen Oliver and Dave Kovar and Steve LaValle, and I sat in this room and listened to everyone's ideas and thought I got a lot out of it. But what really occurred to me was that these folks were really smart, and they were making 10 times more money than I was, but they weren't 10 times smarter than me, right? So there must be something else, They weren't 10 times more. They didn't work 10 times more hours than I did. They didn't work 10 times harder, but they made 10 times more money. So it's not just intelligence or IQ points or some other genetic predisposition to being successful. It was something else, So I think that makes it real for you and makes it possible for you, and then it completely accelerates your learning curve so that you can learn what they know a hell of a lot quicker than it took them to learn it, right? I think that's the how behind the why,
Well, and I think there's an element even that's more simple than that.
which is as we were seeing in Newark, is if you just don't have an understanding of what is capable or what is what comparable locations, I mean, you know, the corporate term is benchmarking. If you haven't benchmarked what is possible, then almost everybody sets their sights way too low. And so if you know that in your type of town, in your type of city, with your type of clientele and your type of martial arts, that a bunch of other schools are doing $500,000 a year and you're doing $5,000 a month, if you really know that, and part of it is the getting rid of excuses, and so that's what you're talking about, is sitting in the room with the other people who are doing it and suddenly realizing that it's not that they have the best demographics in the world, or not that they're all, you know, Rhodes Scholars, or not that they're all, you know, world champion kickboxers like Grandmaster Smith, but that they're people who are approachable, who have been where you are, who have done what you've done, who had somebody who taught them the skill set or learned it through trial and error, and then who just went and did something. If you learn that, then you can, you know, you can have whatever results you decide to have. But until you understand that, you know, if I'm at $5,000 a month and I grow 10%, that's not a good thing. That, you know, the comparable for, you know, somebody in a comparable situation is maybe $40,000 a month. And I need to know the skills but first have the understanding and the belief.
Yeah, and none of those strategies include diminishing the quality of your students, becoming a greasy, slick used car salesman, sacrificing the integrity in your methodology or your style or any of that. None of it includes that. See, those are the most likely excuses in our industry. See, I after New Jersey, I flew to Las Vegas and I actually spent 2.5 days with the top 260 or so gymnastics, dance, cheer, and swim school owners in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And these are folks that have 3,000, 3,500, 4,000 students in their facilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to tell you, the average level of sophistication of our Inner Circle Peak Performer members is about triple the level of the folks that were in that room, right? So our guys have a much more sophisticated understanding of customer lifetime value and how to decommoditize their product, right? So the thing that you just said a minute ago, I think that's really important for everybody to understand, is acknowledge and understand what industry norms are, but don't follow industry averages. Industry averages only force you to be average. Follow industry exceptions. Follow the exceptional, right?
Yeah.
The guys in the room, you know, in this thing in Las Vegas, the things that they were doing were completely the opposite of what everybody else in the industry were doing. And that's why they were at the top, you know? That's why they were at the top. They figured out that, you know, people don't, you know, only buy the cheapest thing in their area. They don't make buying decisions based on what's most accessible, cheapest, easiest to consume, right? And that's what I think a lot of martial arts school operators really have to internalize.
Absolutely.
So, great opportunity.
Let's do this, since we have the privilege of having both Chief Master Clark and Grandmaster Smith. Master Smith, if you don't mind, let me walk you through some questions to help bring out the genius that you've developed in school operations over the year. And Chief Master Clark was very generous in recognizing your input at the genesis of many of his business systems. Master Smith, if you were to look at the four or five things that each school owner should be doing right now from a standpoint of marketing to make sure they're having 20 or 30 or more new students a month, as opposed to 3 or 4 or 5 new students a month. How would you tell everybody around the world to get busy on that?
Well, we're going to pick 4 or 5 things for them to do.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, you can pick as many as you want.
Okay. Well, you know, if there was only 4 or 5 to do that would make your school successful, then probably all of them would be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem that most schools have. And when I talk to schools about marketing and how do you get the new enrollments, the biggest mistake that I find that most schools do is they count on one or two things each month to drive all of the traffic for their school.
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't put into place a real robust marketing plan for the whole month. And when a school is going to be successful, if our goal is to, you know, we have a simple business. We only have to do two things to make our school successful. And then there's a lot of things that make up those two things being successful. One is driving new traffic to the school so we have new enrollment. The other one is keeping them in there long enough to renew them.
Yep.
If we can do those two things, we're going to have a successful school. Now, that's like saying that if you want to be a good boxer, you have to have a good jab and a good right cross.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, yes, but there's 100 other things that go into making up the strategy and conditioning and training and everything that goes into those two simple things. So if we wanted to say we had to be successful, we had to drive marketing, then what we have to do is we have to have a plan of action, which means that how many days in the month are there? And you don't even have to say how many working days, because, you know, obviously most schools are closed on Sundays. I have been shocked to find out that some schools do a skeleton day on either Friday or Saturday. You know, for the schools that are doing that, I'm saying, you know, give me a place that doesn't charge me rent on Friday and Saturday, then I can say, you know, they're going to give me a break on that. But, you know, you need a full 6 days at the school. And on the seventh day, we might not have classes at the school, but that doesn't mean we're not marketing. You know, on Sunday, we might be doing birthday parties. We might be doing a movie theater. We might be doing a community activity that's going on, you know, something at the community center, something at the school, you know, the public school activity. There's things that are going on, different community outreach programs or things like that that happen on the weekends too. And, you know, so for a school owner to say, oh, well, we don't work on Sunday, so we're not going to market on Sunday, you know, that's a big mistake. There's some big things that happen on Sunday sometimes. You know, I know for the summer, you know, there's a lot of kid movies and a lot of martial art type movies that are coming out during the summer. And I know that on Sundays, you know, we booked a lot of intros and, you know, got a lot of leads. And if we left Sunday off of our schedule, but there's still schools out there who think that, oh, well, we don't work on Sunday. Oh, my staff doesn't want to work on Sunday. Well, it's not a matter of if they want to work. It's a matter that that's part of this job. And the job and the field that you're in sometimes requires you to work extra hours. And if we're going to market for the whole month, then we have to plan a strategy that is going to have both internal and external marketing. We
mm-hmm.
have to have a plan that is going to have both cost and non-cost activities and marketing things. We have low cost, we have high cost. And the way we decide which of those we do, sometimes schools don't have the dollars.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say? You don't say, well, we don't have the dollars, so we can't market. As soon as I make more money, then I'm going to start spending that money to market. Well, that isn't what happens. You still
mm-hmm.
have to market. And it's either dollar intensive or it's labor intensive. I have yet to find one that requires both. Because if you have to go to, you know, hand out flyers or door hangers, if you have
and by the way, you said you've yet to find one that requires both. I've yet to require one that requires neither. Right? So
There is one that requires neither. You know, you have it. I know there is. And to be honest with you, that's what most of the karate schools out there are doing. They're doing neither. And the neither is when you sit in the school and you wait for the phone to magically ring and somebody to say, yes, I wanted to sign up for your black belt program, and I have a credit card. Can I give it to you over the phone?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're waiting for that person to walk in the front door with pulling his wallet out as he's walking in the front door, you know, asking, where do I pay because I want to get signed up?
Yeah.
So,
I was explaining in Jersey that so many schools I talk to say that they rely on word of mouth. But really what they mean when they say that is they're sitting around the school hoping somebody's going to walk through the door. And it's okay, your term you used was internal marketing activities, meaning birthday parties, movie days, parent night out. You can go through a list of 50 of them, all of which are designed to generate family add-ons or referrals. And there's lots of ways to generate referrals, but sitting around and hoping for one isn't the right approach. Now, maybe redirect it here for a second. Is your school in Sterling, Virginia, had some of the best results of any school in the country on the Karate Kid last year and on a couple of the other movie promotions before that. Give everybody a sense. Obviously, we have Kung Fu Panda, and as we've been talking to our franchise schools, there's a bunch of good target kids' movies that are surrounding Kung Fu Panda. Kung Fu Panda is kind of a little ninjas crowd, but there's also Pirates of the Caribbean, and there's Transformers, and a bunch of others. Give them a sense of what kind of opportunity this brings and how to go about that.
Well, you know, it all starts with, a lot of schools don't want to spend money. And to get into some of these theaters, it's going to cost you $500 to $1,000 a weekend to be in there. And, if you tell a school, I want you to be in there every weekend this month. Well, not only does it require, $2,000 to $3,000 or $4,000 maybe, but it's also going to require a lot of staff. You're going to have people there, that are, promoting your school and running the marketing. Now, I'm not going to take credit for what we did last year because Sean and Allie at our school, actually ran that. I went there and I helped them set up a little bit, and I was there a few hours over the days, but they actually did it. But the format that we got was really from you, Master Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you have been doing for years, and all we did was listen to what you were saying, and to be honest with you, it was the first time that we had ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I did, because we had never done it before, I got into there a couple weekends before the opening of Karate Kid to basically practice a little bit, because I thought that the main thrust would be on the day of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That opening weekend, which in reality, there happened to be a couple other movies that were kid-friendly, and they had a good turnout. So we actually got quite a few enrollments and, booked intros and got a lot of leads the couple weekends before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, the Karate Kid weekend was the biggest weekend because obviously there was a lot of people coming in on that opening weekend, but there are other opportunities. It's not always just one or two movies during the year.
Yeah.
And the whole format of capturing lead information, of booking appointments, and all this was nothing more than us just following what you had done. And again, even yourself, it had been several years because a lot of your staff got lazy and didn't want to do it and weren't taking advantage of a lot of that. So I think it even surprised you, because I know back when we had Ninja Turtles and doing all that, I was in the theaters back then
But you had done it for even years after that.
Yeah.
We did it for back in that time, and I was just thinking it was just because of that one movie or two movies, and then we realized that you could actually take advantage of it on a broader base.
Well, if I recall correctly, I had heard of you at the Junery Institute doing a lot of stuff with Enter the Dragon, and really had no sense of what it was, other than it was a nice tie-in. And then when Karate Kid, the first movie, came out, I already had several schools in Denver and went to see it on Friday morning, knew it was going to be something very useful for us. I didn't know if it was going to be a blockbuster or not, but really by later that afternoon had posters and flyers and stuff out in three or four different theaters. I had multiple schools already by that time. And the thing is the results are all about the amount of energy you put in. And I saw several schools here in the Denver metropolitan area who mimicked what we did last time with Karate Kid. But they went in, they put a booth, and they had somebody who seemed somewhat apathetic sitting behind the booth, and they had some flyers for their school sitting on the desk, and they really didn't do much of anything. But it's all about the contest spin wheel, and it's about having the fairly dramatic presentation to get people to pay attention to the booth, and it's about talking to them on the way into and out of, not just in this case Kung Fu Panda, but on the way into and out of all the movies. And I know for a lot of our schools, they got more traffic off of some of the other movies. And I remember many years ago, and I forget which movie it was at the time, but there was a series of movies that I had done very effectively, and then there was one we were set up in, and maybe it was Karate Kid 4, or it was Power Rangers 2. It was one of the movies that flopped. But it happened to be the same weekend as the first Batman movie opened. And so we were just flooded, but it didn't have anything to do with the quote-unquote martial arts movie. It had to do with all the people coming in for Batman. And it was really the most effective one I think I've ever had. And if you remember, if it was Karate Kid 4, it may or may not have been, but if it was Karate Kid 4, that was the one that, I think four people went to see. It was Hilary Swank's first debut. But
the next Karate Kid.
The next Karate Kid. There you go. But it was one of those movies that, it just flopped, but happened to be on the opening weekend of Batman, and we did a just fabulous job, not because they were coming in to see a karate movie, but because there was a ton of people who were in the right demographics for our audience. And by the way, the same principle is true. If you're an adult-oriented school and you're looking for an adult audience, finding the movies that appeal to that audience and being there during those weekends are fabulous. One of the results that we had last year was I forget what a couple of the other movies were, but there was the couple of other more teenage and adult oriented movies that we did very well with, even when the crowd from Karate Kid tapered off. Of course, then we had the other bust was Airbender. We were there for Airbender. Luckily, there were some other big hits that same weekend. So, Matt Smith, going back. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Mr. Oliver, to say that, all things being equal, if you think about the psychological condition of the market, quote-unquote, the market, last mm-hmm. year when Karate Kid was coming, that was at sort of, let's not say the peak, but that was at a heightened state of economic sensitivity in the general marketplace, right? So they were still pretty freaked out. People were still pretty freaked out, right? They were still
Bummed
really
out the
concerned
press
about
and the
what was going to happen. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. See, this year it's much different. Now, I don't think we think that Kung Fu Panda is going to be as big of a martial arts specific hit as perhaps Karate Kid was. But if you look at the surrounding films, you've got Smurfs and you've got, like you said, Transformers. There are six or seven releases this summer that are going to be really big. Everyone in the movie industry, I've been talking to Paramount Pictures and DreamWorks, and I've been talking to them quite a bit over the last several months with these promotions. And they're all seeing the market thawing. They're all seeing DVD sales are going up. They're all seeing, nice increases in their business. So my belief is, and I think you share the belief, that the psychological hesitancy of the market today going to Kung Fu Panda and then taking that to the next step you know, you get in front of them, you collect a lead, they win something in the wheel, you set the appointment, they're probably 50% more likely to actually show up this year. They're probably 50% more likely to actually enroll this year. They're probably 50% more likely to become involved in your summer program this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and I hate to give credit to the economy improving, right, because it's still about hard work and making this thing work. But if I had mediocre results last year with the same amount of labor this year, I probably have much better results. So I think there may be some people who last year tried this thing, you know, were less than you know, ecstatic about the results, although we have lots and lots of schools that have great results, right? But I think
have schools that made, you know, 100, 150, 200, 280, I think was the record appointments in one weekend.
Yeah,
and
Patrick Smith, 278. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And those didn't convert, you know, 50% of them didn't end up enrolling.
Right.
But if you make 280 appointments and only enroll 10%, you got 28 new students.
Exactly.
And we weren't coaching people on the $49 for 3 months. I mean, you know, in our schools it was, you know, 400 down, 197 a month. It was just, you know, normal enrollment straight in. So,
exactly. And again, this reinforces what I said earlier in the day today. On June 10th and 11th in Denver, we have sort of orchestrated the timing of this so that it works for what we think is going to be a big introductory influx, you know, through the summer movie promotion season. On June 10th and 11th, we're having a very high level, let's call it sales, but it's more than that. We're having a very high-level sales training event for all of our NEMA members and a few, you know, special guests outside of our organization. It's very high-level, very intense, you know, how to lead a customer down the path, how to lead a new student and family to truly believe in your program and truly, you know, make that financial and psychological commitment to training in your program long-term. So if that's an area of weakness in your school, we've developed this event, this two-day training to help fill that gap. And if you've just put, you know, 150 new intros into your school, or, you know, 100 new intros into your school in May, and, you know, now in June we can get your staff all up to speed on exactly how we can convert those guys into, you know, long-term members at premium prices without sounding salesy or pushy or, you know, feeling like you're the greasy used car salesman. This is all about ethical, honest, and forthright communication and leadership of the students. So, and now the fair warning is this. This is a very high level, very intense, you know, not cheap thing.
Right.
This is something that that's designed to generate extra zeros on your income by the end of the year. So certainly, and the time and energy and effort we're putting into developing it and presenting it is not, you know, inexpensive.
This is designed for a very high-level client. It's the number one gap we see across all of our schools, and the higher-level schools, is their effective ability to be persuasive and their effective ability to just, you know, help somebody decide quickly on the enrollment, help somebody decide quickly on the renewal, is, you know, the ability to sell is not a born-in trait. It's certainly not something I was good at when I started. It's not something that martial artists can't learn. In fact, it's something that martial artists have to learn if they're going to be effective teachers. Is you're selling your students all the time on, you know, as Master Clark was just saying, is on, you know, coming back to the class, on what day they're going to get their black belt, on how they're going to train to get to that level, and on being part of the leadership program or training to black belt or enrolling. So we find that skill set deficit to be the most glaring thing that across a lot of the schools. I mean, we have, you know, we've got Inner Circle members at 50,000 a month who truly should be at 150 if they had decent sales skills for both themselves and their staff. So it's the biggest thing we find is a deficit, and really one of the most important sales traits. I mean, look at companies across industries and look at successful people across industries and the ability to communicate effectively with somebody else, to be persuasive and to get them to take action is the most important thing. You know, Apple's a company that's a lot in the news, and the fear is that, you know, they may not get back their best salesperson of the company, and that's Steve Jobs. And it's so important, that sales skill. And you know, he's in the situation.
Well, I was going to say the gap is typically two things. The gap is typically, number one, not having the right belief structure and mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, the vocabulary, the phraseology, the body language, all of that. So it's sort of the headspace and then the technical. And that's exactly what we're going to be spending basically two full days locked in a room, right?
Exactly.
And we're going to imbue your staff with the right phraseology, the right vocabulary, the right belief system, the right ability to sit correctly in the chair, look the person in the eye, touch them on the shoulder appropriately, the A to Z, so that when they come back to your location, when they come back to your school with you, they not only can recite the recite the script, which is always a little hinky, but they actually believe it. They actually believe in the process, and they have the best interest of the student in mind. So, I'm pretty excited about it.
Master Clark said one thing, and I want to go back to Master here. But Master Clark said one thing. He said, we role play every week with our staff. And the schools that have trouble being successful, I hear they say things like, well, I try to do that in meetings, but my guys don't like it. Or my guys don't want to do that. So, and they all say to me, well, I'm nervous in front of you, but I do fine when I'm really doing an enrollment, or I do fine when I'm really talking to a student. And you can't allow that to happen any more than you let a white belt come in and they say, yeah, I just want to watch you do a sidekick. Really, when you're not watching, I do it fine. And but so many school owners they fall prey to that. Grandmaster Smith, we have to wrap up here, and we did have a couple of questions. We should get to them on the next call, and we'll get to them in writing as well. One of them was actually, and I talked to this member directly, but was, I've got 280 intros coming in this week. How do I handle that flow of enrollment? It's a happy problem to have. And so I think I gave him a pretty good answer already, but we'll try to get to that in writing and get to it on our next call. And by the next call, I think we should have a ton of schools that have that same problem with Kung Fu Panda, and we'll of course answer that question at the seminar you're talking about, the little boot camp. What is the day on that, Toby? Toby? May have lost.
I was talking up a storm there. I was on mute.
Okay.
It's a Friday and Saturday. It's June 10th and 11th. So it's
June
a Friday and Saturday. It's a Friday and Saturday in Denver, so it's easy to fly into. You can fly in, late Thursday night, fly out Sunday, and, you miss, one day of classes, maybe 2 days of classes, so perfect.
Yeah, we're actually going to do 9th, 10th, and 11th, because we're going to do Peak Performer Inner Circle the day before, so anybody who's on the event or has been approved and hasn't gotten into that should make the leap. But to wrap up, Grandmaster Smith, two or three thoughts from our conversation with Chief Master Clark, or observation you've made from the many schools you talk to every week on a few key ingredients that would kick everybody up to the next level?
Well, I think the one thing that can make a major difference very quickly was what he was talking about when he was talking about going for the paid in full.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you don't have to have a whole lot of paid in fulls each month to make a big difference in your growth.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one or two paid in fulls on renewals, a lot of schools can double their growth.
Mm-hmm.
A couple paid in fulls on enrollments, and you have an opportunity to jump your growth maybe 10 to 20%. And knowing what the growth of some of the schools are out there, maybe even a higher percentage. But the idea, though, what he said that was very important was to make sure that you don't start talking about all the cash until you've already got the contract and the down payment and, a monthly payment in place, and how you structure that. And I think that would be, I think you said, Master Milroy there said that he was going to have, they were going to be covering the whole structure of how to word that, because it's a very delicate thing that if you say it wrong, you end up buying it back. whereas they were going to sign up, and then all of a sudden they either say, wow, you mean it costs that much? I didn't realize it was going to be that expensive, because on a monthly basis it doesn't sound that much, but when you multiply the whole thing out. So there is sometimes a sticker shock. So you got to be a little careful, and the wording on that will be very important. And are they going to cover that in June, Toby?
Yeah. We're going to cover, I'm going to cover that, and you and I, Master Smith, are going to cover that in depth. We behind the scenes, we call that the oh, by the way close, right?
Exactly.
You know, after everything's done. And some people even do that, you know, 2 or 3 days later or by letter. I prefer it to be contract signed, you gave me a check, and oh, by the way, I didn't mention to you. But we will cover that in depth.
There is a correct way to do that and a wrong way to do it. So I've had it backfire on a lot of people. So you got to be very careful with what you do on that. But it is a big money gross. It jumps your gross quite effectively.
Right. Yeah. There's the way that you and I do it, Grandmaster Smith, and there's the way we teach the staff to do it, and they vary a little bit.
And I think the other thing is to make sure that you're doing enough different marketing things and you have it planned out. You don't just, oh, let me see, what am I going to do this week? Or what am I going to do this week? Or, you know, by the middle of the month, we're not getting many enrollments. Let's go back and reevaluate our marketing. No, it should already be planned out for the month, and everything, internal, external, cost, non-cost, everything should be structured out.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Grandmaster Smith. Thank you, Master Milroy. Any last things that these guys need to know other than create the burning desire and the belief system hit the numbers?
I think that's it. I mean, I think right now, if you haven't already, you know, gotten some momentum, I think now is it, because, I mean, the market is thawing. People are much more confident today. We got Osama, so... You know, they're going to be more confident, you know, next week than they were last week. So, you know, it's either now we go out and soak up all the market share we can, or we allow our competitors who went belly up last year to come back in and start, you know, screwing up the market for us again, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks to everyone, and I will remind everybody, send us as many questions as humanly possible before these calls. If we don't get to them on the call, we're answering them in the NAPA now on a regular basis as well, so we can answer your specific questions. And, of course, part of the biggest benefit of Key Performers Inner Circle are those one-on-one calls that we do each month to really focus on your personal needs. So thank you to everybody, and let's rock and roll with Kung Fu Panda and with all the other things we have going on in May for everyone.
Okay, and have a good day, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.